Welcome to the Two Girls with Grief book club. We might laugh or we might cry, but we always read.
The book club where we make ourselves cry, but sometimes we read books that also are fun. This book that we're reading today is The Beach Read by Emily Henry. We're going over today chapters 5 through 10. So hopefully you've watched our 1 through 5 breakdown. These chapters I feel like becomes a little bit more juicy.
Yeah, I agree.
Starts to pick up. What are your thoughts
clues.
So far going?
We're getting backstory.
What are your thoughts on the book so far?
I love it. And in fact, I'm having a hard time like stopping because I think I'm actually a couple chapters ahead because I couldn't stop listening to it because I'm like, this is so good.
It is hard to stop yourself. Like, it is hard because we're reading it in chapters and I'm making notes of everything. It is hard to do that. I have been. It's like, okay, just stop. But I'm trying to keep it like fresh in my brain. Mm-hmm. So I've been making notes. But it is hard because you're like, oh, it kind of ends at a time that I want to keep reading.
Right. And the pacing is really quick. I feel like there's not really any slow parts where you're like, oh, can we hurry up and get through this? Like, even in the more in like dialogue and conversation, like the pacing is good. I feel like they're pretty quick. Like you can keep up with it pretty well.
Yeah. I feel like there's a good amount going on and there's a little, you know, mix of like her grief, but like the romance part, I feel like it's a good mixture, of plot lines. So
yeah, a lot of emotion happening, like
a lot of emotion.
January is being flipped back and forth between so much happening.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, the chapter 6 opens with her bumping into her dad's mistress because she's also at the book club, so she's freaking out, and then she goes into the bathroom and like starts downing the wine that she brought in her purse, and so it's like a very dramatic opening.
Honestly, a very memorable part of the book. Like, I laugh about that in her purse wine.
Yeah, her purse wine. And I in the bathroom she has a line where she says, this will be the hardest night you'll have all summer, but like she like even as she said it, She acknowledges like that's a lie to her. She's telling herself, but she just tried to kind of like push herself to get through this moment. Mm-hmm. And then I think when she leaves, she hears Sonia's like making an excuse, like she has to go back to work and she has to leave all of a sudden. So like they don't cross paths again. That's where Gus shows up.
Yeah. So she goes from being like this awkward encounter with her with her dad's mistress and then her like arch nemesis
crush.
Yeah, college crush shows up.
Yeah, but it was funny because I don't know if they mention it in this chapter or the next, but they basically both thought they were invited because they're both writers. They both thought that they were being invited to kind of be like guests of honors. Because, like, they didn't even tell them what book it was.
Right.
And they just were like, oh, where's the book club? So they assumed, okay, then you must be talking about my book. It must be, like, a special guest thing.
And I felt very seen as a book club member in the dialogue between all the ladies talking about the book and everybody's random thoughts. And it's very much like real book club where it's like, so what'd you think about the book? And, like, someone's going to love it and then someone is going to hate it. Like, there's all these opinions.
That's true.
And it's just a fun time. I think, like, everybody should be a part of a book club.
That's true about reading in general. I go on like Goodreads so often.
Me too.
But then there's sometimes books that like I loved and other people will like tear apart and they hated it.
Yeah.
And they didn't like a single second of it. And sometimes it's hard because you want to go in with just a non-biased opinion. Mm-hmm. And when people tell you they don't like the book, you want to think, I won't like this book. You know, like, or you assume that you're not going to like this book, but in reality, people are going to see books differently.
Yeah. And you know, what people like, want out of books is different.
Yeah, I think it's different.
People who are reading books that might be, you know, my big thing is like, you might really love a book and the writing is simple. And just because it's simple writing doesn't mean it's a bad book. I think people are like, you know, might be a little pretentious thinking like a great book has complex writing. And I'm like, some of the best books I've ever read have the simplest writing. And I think that's more relatable to people who are reading and need kind of like escapism and just need to get out of their own heads for a while.
Yeah. For me, I feel like that's the best part of reading is that you kind of get to leave your world and go to another story. Mm-hmm. As long as it's a good story plot, like I'm generally happy.
Yeah.
And it might be like depending on my mood too. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think that's like, I love that this conversation I feel like is alluded in the book itself between her writing about romance books and then Gus's writing about like these complex, serious things, and showing that like what people like out of reading and what they're getting from their authors are different. And that's okay. Like, people read for different reasons.
Yeah, I think that's how chapter 7 ends, where they basically get into a fight. And I don't know if it's like she's being sensitive about her writing or kind of where she is. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if it's like a miscommunication, but basically he did say like, I don't know why the women have their own section. And she basically went off like, if you read any story and you change the woman to a man, then it's just fiction. It's not woman's fiction. It's just fiction.
Yeah.
And then the genre would get the respect it deserves if like there was a man in the plot. But yeah, they basically both left the book club. She was super drunk because she drank all her purse wine. And Gus offered to take her home, but she's like fighting with him. I don't need a ride. I'm going to call an Uber. But like, there's no Ubers there. It's a very small town. It was late at night. And so she eventually gets into their car, and then they go to this old like donut spot where it's like they get day old donuts and like, I think maybe day old coffee. And it seems like they're taking a turning point, but then that's when they start fighting about the books or like the genres is like towards the end of the chapter. So it's like, you see them kind of like having these like cute moments, they're talking about, you know, having donuts, and then all of a sudden it's like they erupt into fighting again.
I'll say it was in this chapter I was thinking the banter is so good, because it is like borderline they're about to fight each other but also flirting, and it is like Emily Henry does such a good job teetering on that line.
I do love a good banter for sure. Yeah. It always gets
that
me.
That chapter really like stole the banter show, because I was like, man, this is a good the way they just go back and forth over the donuts, and I was like, this is a good chapter with good banter. If you like good banter, this is a good book for it.
Yeah. And chapter 8 opens with, I feel like Gus is a little bit you know, they say like dark mysterious guy. Mm-hmm. And so he basically just like says he doesn't like happy endings. That's why he doesn't like women's stories, is like he doesn't like that there's always a happy ending. I think he says there's a line that life is pretty much a series of good and bad moments until you die, which is true, but it feels like that's a very like,
a very simplified look.
Yeah, like simplified slash negative way to look at life. But and he also says like love is more likely to blow up in your face than bring internal happiness. So he's like, he comes off like very jaded and, you know, very dark. And I think he always has been that way from like what they talk about in college, but he seems more so now, I think. And I'm pretty sure that's like I think he came off that similar way, but I think more so now. And you figure out like later the reasoning why, but he kind of alludes to just like he doesn't believe in happy endings or happy times or happy life.
Yeah.
It's just a very dark outlook on life.
Which I feel like, you know, and I know he's not necessarily the character in Grief, but that's kind of like a complex conversation as like you get deeper into the book and you realize like it's a different thing. But we don't know that quite yet in this chapter. But that is an outlook I feel like a lot of grievers have. I certainly did after like the loss of my dad. Yeah. Was like, there's no happiness left in the world. What's the point of like doing anything? Like, I'm just going to sit here in my like eternal rain cloud. And and you don't want that, obviously. Like, I don't think, but it's just like that depression that overlooms you.
It's so relatable.
Yeah. It's very much. And I feel like even in this situation he's talking about, that's a very similar thing of like, especially when you're immediately after the loss and you're grieving and you're thinking like, what's the point of all of this? What's the point of, you know, falling in love? What's the point of being motivated in life if all of it's not worth it? Like, nobody's going to have a happy ending. And that's kind of like, it's a realistic view, but it's not a hopeful view.
Yeah, I feel like you always have to have... You always have to be optimistic when you get beaten down. But I mean, totally relatable. I know like when my mom passed away, after already my dad and my sister passed away, I was just like, there's no way in hell this just happened. Like, there was no way that the cards that I got dealt would mean that I had to lose my dad, my sister, and then my mom. Like, I don't even get to keep my mom. And yeah, I think it's really easy to just be like, life sucks. I don't give a shit about anything.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to bounce back from that when it's like you've been through so much. And I think it's always an ongoing process. But so super relatable what he was saying. But to bring it back to a happy, cute moment in the book, because that's why I like the romance books with the grief elements, because there's it bounces off the happy it and does. The sad, is that he calls January out that they know each other because she kept calling him Gus, which is the name that he went by before he started writing. So only people that knew him before he published would call him Gus. Everyone else called him, I think, like Augustus or his last name, which I forgot it is. So like he calls her out. He's like, come on, January, you remember me. And she was like trying to play it cool. And he's like, well, I just didn't know if you remembered me, so I didn't want to say anything. And he was like, yeah, it wasn't that long ago. And there was that one night. And they flash back to the one night where basically they were at a party, and then I think it was basically they were like freak dancing. I don't know if that's what they call it now, still like bumping and grinding.
Yeah, like they were at a frat party or something?
Something like that, some type of party, and they just started bumping and grinding, and so they're all over each other. But I think that's like the only night they had.
Well, but and she then, already like, the timeline. We start getting into the timeline of the whole thing because she's like. I thought in her mind, he's with somebody. He's dating somebody,
oh, yeah.
One of her friends. And she's like, but I have this big crush on him. And so you start getting into like, you don't really know what the real timeline is. And you're missing some details. But this is what's going on in her head.
I think it might have been her roommate, because she mentions he dated multiple of her roommates.
Yeah.
So
he had dated all her friends.
I feel like it's so relatable, though. Like, a guy will, especially when you're younger, will do stuff like that and then say that he likes you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why would you date everybody else if you're saying that you like me? I feel like that's such, like, a young guy thing to do.
Weird thing. It's a weird tactic.
It's like, okay, that's, yeah, I don't know what that is, but I feel like that's a common occurrence that happens.
Yeah.
But I do like that in their relationship, I feel like you can tell that he has this level of like care about her, and like mm-hmm. he just notices things. And he talks about how like she's different. He like can't let go that she's different now, and he wants to know why. And she's like, oh, I'm not like why, because I'm not acting like a fairy princess anymore. And he's like, well, you're drinking wine out of a purse. There must be like a reason why you're doing that. And I think that's when she finally admits that she's having writer's block and she's running out of money.
Yeah.
I know for sure that's where she admits that. And then Gus, I think Gus brings up to make the deal of like, okay, why don't we switch? Like, you write a book about, I don't even know what his genre is. I forgot. Like, what?
Yeah, they keep comparing him to like a Hemingway or like a Steinbeck. But then we find out like the topic of his book, and I feel like it's a very different
topic. I don't know. It's a very dark, let's just say a dark genre. Yeah,
very dark.
So switch, because she can't write happy endings right now. So like he will write a romance book and she will write this dark book, and whoever gets published, then they're going to support each other's books.
And he's kind of like cocky about it. He's like, well, I can write a women's romance book. Like, that's easy. I can do that in my sleep. And she's like, it's actually like not that easy. Like, it's easier for her because she is a woman's romance writer. But she's like, you think it's so easy, but I don't think you're going to find it that easy.
Yeah. And of course, he ends it with the line, promise not to fall in love with me. And she's like, are you like misquoting A Walk to Remember, like the greatest movie or something?
Like throwback to like what a good movie. Ugh, broke my heart.
That was a good movie.
Same thing, like Bad Boy falls in love with a good girl that believes in love.
They don't make movies like that anymore.
No, they don't. Shout out to the early 2000s.
Yeah, but it's just funny because that's what she mentions as she calls him out. And I feel like, I like that they can just call each other out and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they're very real and they don't hold back, which I like. I like that like banter.
And then we find out that he's read her book. And
He
quotes the dedication of her book, and it was about her parents and like their love story. And she's like, oh, you actually read my book. Like, she's stunned.
I forgot about that. I remember that that she basically is like, okay. Oh, yeah. I think she trades information of that her dad died.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she's here. She traded that information to, like, for him to share one of his, like, deep, dark secrets, because he's, like, you know, so mysterious. And he said, I lied. I've read your books. Which is, like, it's so cute. I don't know. It's, like, a cute thing. You're, like, okay, he has, like, paid attention to my career.
Yeah.
But I forgot that he quoted, because that's actually really cute. That's even cuter.
Well, and it's been years since they've graduated college, and, like, they've gone off on two different paths in life. And so the fact that, like, after all this time, he's still reading her books, like, goes to show he remembers her, and she stood out to him when they were in school together. Yeah, that was just a really, like, sweet moment. I kind of gushed.
I feel like those things don't happen anymore, you know? No. Like, those kind of, like, really cute moments. Because I feel like as you get adults, like, they, it just kind of, like, feels stalkerish instead of, like, cute.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it's like, you don't know who is still on your radar or, like, you know, who made an impact, like, on you.
Who's checking your Instagram page and you have no clue.
Yeah, you don't know those things.
Yeah. I'm having, like, those same conversations now with a few of my friends that I've been friends with since high school, because our high school reunion is coming up. And we were like, oh my God, 10 years. And, like, who are we going to see? And it's just, like, brought up, like, crazy stories from our past. And, like, oh, I wonder what happened to this person. And this person used to like me. And then we broke up. And, like, it's just been, like, weird to reflect. And I feel like a lot of that nostalgia is, like, happening.
It's just cute fun.
Yeah.
It's just cute fun. It's where it's, like, so lighthearted, where it doesn't really mean anything in the bigger scheme of things, but it just makes your heart, like, skip a beat when it's, like, those cute little crushes. I went to an all-girl private high school, so, like, I don't have any interest in going to the reunion. But it's just, like, I mean, also because my sister passed away and my sister went there, and I just, like, I know that's, like, going to
hang over you.
Yeah, it's going to result in people that, one, everyone that I keep in touch with from high school knows about, you know, like, knows about my sister and stuff and, like, has to talk to me. But people that I don't keep in touch with, or even teachers, like, I don't want anyone asking. Like, I don't want that to be a thing. You know, it's like, if this is a high school reunion, like, I don't want to talk about my dead sister or my dead parents. Like, I don't want to do that. Everyone that I know, I'm still in touch with. Everyone that I care to be in touch with, I am. So.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not, like, oh, I wonder what this guy, or, like, I want to see this guy. Like, there's none of that. It's an all-girl school. So any of that, like, fun is not there. So I'm like, I'm not going. And I'm proud of myself that I actually said that, because my friends were talking about it. Because it was actually, this year was my sister's year for high school reunion. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, do you think you're going to go to ours? And I was like, no. I was like, I don't want to. And I said the thing. I was like, I don't want to be, like, the dead girls. I don't want everyone to, like, talk about my sister or bring it up to people that I don't,
like,
know.
Random people hugging you and you're like, who are you?
Yeah, random people, like, bring it up. I know people are always going to be, like, nosy, and it's like they feel like they can ask questions, and it's like, I don't want to do that. I have no interest in doing that.
It's a really weird and hard balance to, like, juggle people coming up to you, because obviously a loss is, like, just emotional for anybody, but, like, they feel entitled to you as, like, the family member, and you're like, okay, but, like, obviously this is the closest to me and it's affected me the most. So, like,
that happened so much. Honestly, I had people reaching out that just knew me or knew my sister that were like, oh my God, what happened? Like, freaking out. I was, like, so annoyed that so many people were coming out of the woodwork and felt that it was appropriate to bug the sister about details.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't even just like, oh, you know, condolences. It was like, condolences, but, oh, what happened? I need to know. Oh, my God. You know, and, oh, shocking. And I'm like, I can't hold your grief. In fact, you're just pissing me off.
Yeah.
Because we don't know each other, you know? Like,
yeah.
If I have to accept a message request, we're not friends. Like, if I have to accept that on a platform like Facebook or Instagram, we're not friends. Like, so.
Yeah, it feels very odd, because I feel like this, I mean, maybe this has happened for a long time, but I feel with just, like, social media has made it feel like people are entitled to other people's lives. And
yeah, and they're not.
And you're not. And, like, you're not a celebrity. I mean, maybe you will be someday, but like, you're just a normal person going through a really hard time. And like, it's a very interesting like societal phenomena that
it's a weird thing. I could share every piece of my life. And if I choose not to share one thing, I
don't
have to
owe
it
to anybody.
Yeah. Like, and also if I share it once, I don't have to share it again. Right. Like, just because I shared it once doesn't mean I want to continually talk about it. Mm-hmm. It just means I shared it at that moment. It doesn't mean that I need to again. Yeah.
Like, the difference is here, you're extending the story because it is like you're wanting to, and like you're aware of it, and you're sharing the parts that you don't mind sharing. Whereas like,
and I'm in a mind space to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Not randomly at like a high school reunion of people.
Yeah.
Coming
it's like, you don't
want
it.
Tell us the story.
Yeah. I don't think that's what people like don't understand. And I think there's a comfortability. If it's like someone that, you know, you're comfortable with, then mm-hmm. you can have those open conversations that can bring it up and it's fine. But a random person bringing up something that's going to make you sad or you're not ready to talk about, and it's an uncomfortable like situation, you don't have the comfortability, that's totally different. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, if we don't have that relationship, like, don't potentially put me in a sad place because you want information.
Yeah.
Because it's always going to be sad.
Yeah.
I cry about my sister like pretty frequently, honestly. And it's not necessarily like bawling, but it'll just be like something happens and I'm sad and I tear up. Or
yeah,
it could be a
bawling. Kicks it.
I was crying looking at photo. It just happens because it's always going to be sad to me when I think about it. It's just like an immense, it's a painful thing. It's always going to be sad to me. So it's like, don't put me in that situation if we're not friends, or if it's not a space where I will, you know, like, I'm going to be talking about it, you know, that I put myself in and I prepared myself to talk about it. And that's what people don't get when they're just like, tell me this information. It's like, no.
Yeah.
No, I don't care.
And like, I can only imagine like you and I losing people through like health related instances, but I feel bad for people who have lost people in like more like gorier instances, or like more tragic instances, like accidents, or like malicious intent, and where it's like there is a sense of like morbid curiosity there. And I can't imagine like people coming up all the time being like, I want to know the juicy dark details. And it's like you and me, it's like, health stuff happens to everybody all the time. Like, it's like just the nature of life. But then you see people with losses in other contexts and you're like, oh, like, I would hate to have like my loss and my grief be displayed in like a news article that people can like look through and pick at and read through. And you're like, that's my life being put on display because somebody I was close with has passed on.
Mm-hmm. And so, to back to the happy things, which also deals with like her grief, like chapter 9 opens up with her mom and her relationship and just kind of how complicated it is, because once she found out that her mom knew about the affair and didn't tell her, she kind of, for, like, it broke the relationship for a while because she just was like so upset, because she had such an amazing positive experience with her dad as this like loving, supportive husband, this loving, supportive dad that would like, I don't know where the, I think it opens the story of like when her mom got diagnosed with cancer, the dad was like, let's get like, they got dressed up. They went to like this fancy steakhouse in their like neighborhood, like, and they like danced in the restaurant, and like, he's like, it's going to be okay. So to her, it's like her dad is his amazing dad. And then that all falls apart after he passes away, which I feel like is so hard because you're already grieving him as a person and you're grieving like the person that you knew. Yeah. And then I think part of that goes to like her mom and her mom not telling her, and the feeling like the deception in that relationship as well. And that's just like so much to do with that once.
Yeah. And I think it's like she's having the perspective as the child of the relationship of her parents. And I think children will always have a different perspective of a marriage than the actual marriage itself, because they're not in it. And you think, because like her mom was also diagnosed with cancer and like she was going through remission and then gets diagnosed, like there's so much up and down already happening in their family. And that's just like probably another thing her parents are like, we don't need to put this on our daughter. Like, she's already going through so much as it is. And, you know, her mom being the one with actual cancer, she was probably like, I don't know if this is something I want to deal with right now.
Yeah, and her mom, but she, I think in that chapter she does kind of acknowledge, like, her mom, you know, was going through so much pain. She's going through chemo, all these different things.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, her mom was preparing for death, essentially. And then instead she gets better, and then her husband passes away.
Yeah.
And so she kind of, I think, looking back, she's kind of slowly acknowledging, like, my mom's been through a lot too, and maybe I need to be a little easier on her because she's also had a rough go at it, and mm-hmm. it's not easy to know what to do in those situations. So, like, do you let your daughter know? Like, it's already a difficult time. If the mom forgave him, it's like, I don't know. It's a hard thing because it's like adults are just, your parents are just, you know, people living their life too. And I often think that we view them as like these perfect people that know everything and can't do anything wrong. And they're really just living, like living their life. Like, I can't imagine a little person expecting me to know everything. Like, that is so stressful. Just that thought is so stressful.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I can't, it just, you know, you have sympathy for the parents, and like something you kind of learned growing up is like, parents are just people.
Yeah.
That had kids and they're trying to figure it out. It's not easy.
I remember my dad telling me kind of the same thing of like, because I often complained that I was the oldest and I was the one who kind of had to like be the experimented kid of like trying new things. And just like as an oldest, you kind of get tired of that. And so my dad once put it into perspective, and it kind of changed how I saw like my role in my family of that. He's like, you know, I know you're the oldest and you're always having to be the first one to try new things, whereas your siblings get to learn from you and kind of walk in your path, and it's a little easier for them. And he's like, but every day I wake up, it's another new day of being a dad. And he's like, every day brings a new set of challenges. He's like, and I've never done this before either. He's like, so you and I are doing this together. And it kind of just like changed how I saw my parents' role with me and then my role in my family. And it was just kind of put me into a reality check and humbled me a bit of like, okay, like, I'm going to make mistakes. My parents are going to make mistakes. And that's just a part of it. That's life.
Dads can give the best advice.
Yeah.
They really do. My dad gave great advice. I think, wish he took more of his own advice more.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like he was very reflective in what he shared. So that was nice. But yeah, I wish he had done it for himself too. But one thing, she also mentions that in like the chapter, because she had used to like pride herself that she had so much in common with her dad. And now she has mixed feelings about that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel she's having a crisis of like, did I really know my dad? And she's questioning if she's capable of being in a great love, because she's questioning if her dad was able to, since from her knowledge currently, it's like her dad cheated on her mom while she had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And had a mistress, and the mistress was the love of his life in her perception currently, and then he died. So like, she never got to get the answers, and her mom doesn't want to talk about it, so she's just kind of putting the pieces together, but from her perspective, which I think can be hard because you can fill in the blanks and it can be really wrong.
Yeah, and I think like another, like, it's a tiny detail, but there's pictures of her dad and Sonia in the house that she's now like inherited. And I can't only imagine that must be so weird.
That's so weird.
Being like this is a whole nother life that he had.
Yeah, whole other. And also, like, I think it's weird that it's happened in like the first few chapters, but like the dad gave it to the mistress to like give January the letter and the keys to the place.
Yeah.
And I still don't know, like, the reasoning. What is the reasoning to, like, for that to be the sequence of events? I'm not sure if that's ever explained. Because that's, like, traumatic.
So, yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine if, like, at my dad's funeral, someone was like, and here's his... I mean, my parents were divorced, so I guess it would have been fine. But, like...
Sorry, my parents were also divorced.
So it would have been that traumatic. So, chapter 10, I think it's cute because she starts like, you know, she's starting to clean out the cabin and whatever. But one thing I really liked is Gus writes her a note on like a notepad through the window, because they're both like working on windows that face each other. And he writes on the note, "Life is meaningless, January, gaze into the abyss." And then she replies back something about, like, "This feels like a Taylor Swift music video," which is very true, because that was one of my, like, favorite Taylor Swift songs. I can't even, what is the song?
You Belong With Me.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite songs of Taylor Swift, and I clearly remember that video, and it is cute. Like, the guy writing you notes, like, how cute.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they start working, because they have these research days, these little research days together where they research for his book.
Like boot camp for each other's genre.
Yeah, and they do his, and you're kind of like, what is going on? You don't get a lot of context of what the research is about for his book. And then we find out that it's like about a cult where everybody commits suicide, and you're like, whoa, that's a dark turn for this book.
Super dark. And it was like a 3-hour drive to get to this place to meet with a girl, like,
and she's, and January's like, what, where am I going, what is going on? Yeah. And he doesn't give her like any clues or insight of what's going on.
Yeah, I feel like one line for that chapter, and I feel like it kind of deals with, because this is a suicide cult or whatever, and they were asking the sister, like, did you have any idea? Did you know that it was coming? And then she was like, no, she was laughing the last time I saw her. Like, everything seemed fine. And I think that's such a common thing you hear about people mm-hmm. that commit suicide. And I've never experienced it, so I can't really speak on it. But I feel like that's something I've seen in a lot of stories, is like, you just can't tell.
Yeah.
You really don't know when someone's hurting.
Yeah.
And people don't always ask. And it was just a line of like, no, she was laughing, and last time I saw her, and I just thought she was happy, and I didn't think she was gonna do that. And I feel like that's probably a line that resonates with people a lot, of like, mm-hmm. you just don't know.
Yeah,
you can't catch these things.
Yeah, definitely a little turn in the book when we learn about what Gus must be writing about for his manuscript.
Yeah, and then it's interesting because how are you going to turn this into a romance book? Because he's still keeping that topic.
Right.
And so it's interesting. But then this is kind of a shorter chapter, and it ends with, like, her writing her book. And it's basically writing her current life.
Yeah.
And she was saying, like, one of the lines in the book that she's, like, writing about kind of this whole thing is, like, she doesn't know how, like, she's living a life where she's avoiding the man who raised, like, thinking about her dad, basically. And so she's writing that into her story, but, like, she's having a hard, like, hard time with the guy that she admired so much, her dad that she adored. She's now avoiding thinking anything about him because she has so many conflicted feelings about him.
Yeah.
And she's still sad he's gone, and, like, that's, you know, I think there's unresolved grief for that, you know? It's, I think it's really hard when you have any issues or things you wish you'd fix with somebody. And it's another level when you don't think you had anything that you would want to fix with your dad.
Yeah.
And then you find out this whole thing, and then you're, like, angry at him and upset and feel like you don't know him. Like, that's a whole other layer that I don't even know how I would handle that.
Yeah. Like, after my dad passed, it was amazing to hear stories, nothing to this degree, but that other people had different memories and stories about my dad that I had never heard before. And I was like, wow, this is like a whole different, you know, like a whole different angle, or like, you know, perception of who my dad is that I never even knew or I thought about. And it was just like, it's interesting to still learn about people after they're gone and realize like how complex and rich all our lives are, that we ourselves are the only people that will know like our whole lives, but the people even closest to us are going to still don't know about. Like, I think my sister, like, I'm like, I don't know what she really does in her day to day. Like, I really don't know what her routine is. And I would say, like, she and I are the closest people. And yet, you know, I'm still learning new things about her all the time. And I've known her my whole life.
Yeah. I just saw a TikTok that said, basically, when you pass away, all your secrets will come out. So just like, think about that. I'm like, that's kind of weird. But I guess once you're dead, like, what does it matter? I don't know.
Rachel, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't even know what I did that time.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know what I need to hide, but I don't know. But oh, actually, so I made a note. So he chapter 10 ends with, that's when she tells him that her dad died, and he admits that he read her books. And he's like, I lied. I read your books. And that's the last line in the book. or not a book, but in a chapter, is like, I lied, I read your books, and he like walks away. And then that's so dramatic, and I feel like dramatic and cute, where you're like, oh my god, you read my read my work. And then it just ends, like dramatic pause, and then it's, then you're left to like ruminate about, what does that mean? That he's that he's done that, like what does that mean? I don't know. I'd probably freak me out. I'd probably get all giddy and stuff.
This would actually, like, this book would make a great movie.
It would, but
somebody's out there.
Oh, no, I think it actually is in the works.
T, can't wait.
Yeah, but I feel like I sometimes prefer the book just to say a book.
Yeah,
because
the book is always better.
The book is always better, and it just sometimes the actors like aren't what I pictured. Mm-hmm. I feel like my biggest one for this is, it's not even a book, it's cartoons, is X-Men.
Oh, okay.
Rogue. She had like the Southern twang. She was like this badass. And then in the movie, they cast, I forgot her name, but they made her not have the Southern twang, and they made her come off so freaking weak and like useless. And I was like, that is not who I grew up admiring as a kid. Like, and I just like, I didn't watch any Marvel movies until like probably a couple years ago when the pandemic hit and had nothing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I started watching them. I still haven't gone back to watch X-Men, but I like was on a ban of Marvel movies because I was like, how you depicted my favorite character, not okay with me.
Well, and sometimes I feel like the movie industry, they pick up books because they're like, oh, this will make a great movie. We're going to make so much money.
Yeah.
And then they don't pick people to direct the movie or produce the movie that are like, that love the book and really want to do the book justice. And I'm going to say this, and this is a controversial take, and I'm totally aware of that. And I'll say that I myself am not like a super big fan, but I respect the community. But I think Twilight... The first Twilight movie, they really tried to make that book come to life in that movie. And I say specifically with like the green like the green scheme of like the whole movie, and like you could just tell like who the lady that directed it just like really loved the book and wanted to make it as true to the book as possible.
I read all the Twilight, I think I read all the Twilight books, but I stopped watching the Twilight movies.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen all of them. And like I said, I'm not really a fan. I read them when they were popular to see what the hype was about. But my big thing was not necessarily the books, but it was like Bella as a character. I didn't like because she didn't have agency. And this is a thing me and my sister talk about all the time. Because she's a big Twilight fan, and I respect her for that, and you know, love your fandoms. But I was like, I can't get behind Bella because I love a strong female protagonist, and Bella is one of that, and that's okay.
No, I think I read all the books, and then I watched the movies, and I stopped watching the movies after there was like the one scene that she's just like sitting down, screaming nonstop about Edward not being there. I think he left.
Yeah.
And I was like, get it together. You are just screaming nonstop. Like, for a man you barely know.
Yeah.
Who's a vampire.
He's 100 years old.
Like, what the heck?
Like, vampire.
This is way too serious for what it is. And you're just like screaming, like, no, you're in high school. Like, what? Like, this is inappropriate in so many levels. And after that, I was like, I can't watch this because this is not good. This is not good behavior. And I just
a little chaotic, stopped watching. Yeah.
But I think after the first one, I visited my cousin in Washington, and we did go to Forks, Washington.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Fun facts about Rachel.
But yeah, now I'm like, I am not a huge fan of that franchise. So yeah,
it's funny to see like the resurgence. What like
yeah.
I guess I don't know when they came out in 2008 or something, but it's funny to see like they're still so big.
And you probably will never make me happy about a movie. Me
neither. I'm probably not gonna be happy either way. I'm gonna complain the entire time. But
adaption. That's me. So that ends the chapters. We're gonna go through next week. We're gonna go through chapters 11 through 15.
Yeah,
and if you're watching this episode, tomorrow we're releasing our actual podcast episode. And this one is a good one. It's going to be, when does the grief end? And it's going to be talking about, like, will you ever feel normal again? So I feel like this is a big topic I see people talking about with grief. So stay tuned for that episode, releasing Tuesday at 6 a.m. And hope you enjoyed this book club. And we hope you follow along. Please follow us on TikTok, Instagram, or YouTube on Two Girls With Grief Pod, or email us at twogirlswithgrief@gmail.com. If you have any book recs, you're following along, you have any questions, anything like that, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.